Hello, Lot here. Just wanting you all to know that this episode has been previously recorded and posted. So I hope you enjoy it or re-enjoy it.
Welcome to Close the Door and Come Here, a Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire podcast with heavy leanings towards our two favorite characters, Jaime and Brienne.
Man, there was a bear up there. All black and brown and covered in hair.
Everyone, tonight we are finishing out our coverage of Tyrion's point of view chapters with his final chapter in A Storm of Swords. Tyrion,
this is his final one ever, right?
Yes.
Kyle, there are no more after this at all. So
there are
we're
no
just...
more. Like, literally, there will never be. I mean, I shouldn't say this because what if Winds comes out?
Winds won't come out.
What if what knows what?
Yeah, what? So in theory, this is it for Tyrion. And I'm Guile. I tweet at Dora Podcast, and we all jumped the gun on this. And I'm joined tonight by Chicky.
Hey, I am Chicky. I am at the Chikrin on Twitter.
And Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel, and I am Rope Dart Raptor on Tumblr.
And two of our favorite occasional gents, we have Cody.
Hey, I'm Cody, and you can find me on Twitter at the Crimson Lord.
And Devin.
Hi, I'm Devin DD Harpo on Twitter.
And I think in this chapter, I will say it's particularly important to have a trigger warnings for rape and violence, as well as our standard spoiler warnings, because it's a doozy. So the chapter starts with Tyrion sitting alone in the black cells, and he hears noises and thinks that they're finally coming for him for his execution. And he tries to psych himself up to die well. You know, whether they're going to kill him right there or whether they're going to execute him publicly. And we get this great passage. And it's fairly long, but I wanted to read it just because of the chemistry of the characters. So bear with me. A torchlight fell across his face. He shielded his eye with a hand. Come on, are you frightened of a dwarf? Do it, you son of a poxy whore. His voice had grown hoarse from disuse. Is that any way to speak about our Lady Mother? The man moved forward, a torch in his left hand. This is even more ghastly than my cell at River Run, though not quite so dank. For a moment, Tyrion could not breathe. You? Well, most of me. Jaime was gaunt, his hair hacked short. I left a hand at Harrenhal. Bringing the brave companions across the narrow sea was not one of Father's better notions. He lifted his arm and Tyrion saw the stump. A bark of hysterical laughter burst from his lips. Oh, gods, he said. Jaime, I am so sorry, but gods be good. Look at the two of us, handless and noseless, the Lannister boys. There were days when my hand smelled so bad I wished I was noseless. Jaime lowered the torch so the light bathed his brother's face. An impressive scar. Tyrion turned away from the glare. They made me fight a battle without my big brother to protect me. I heard tell you almost burned the city down. A filthy lie. I only burned the river. Abruptly, Tyrion remembered where he was and why. Are you here to kill me? Now that's ungrateful. Perhaps I should leave you here to rot if you're going to be so discourteous. Rotting is not the fate Cersei has in mind for me. Well, no, if truth be told, you're to be beheaded on the morrow, out on the old tourney grounds. Tyrion laughed again. Will there be food? You'll have to help me with my last words. My wits have been running about like a rat in a root cellar. You won't need last words. I'm rescuing you. Jamie's voice was strangely solemn. Who said I required rescue? You know, I'd almost forgotten what an annoying little man you are. Now that you've reminded me, I do believe I'll let Cersei cut your head off after all. Oh, no, you won't, he waddled out of the cell. Is it day or night up above? I've lost all sense of time. And... so, again, sorry for reading the whole thing, but it was just, you're so struck by the chemistry of them.
Yeah.
That I couldn't stop, myself. Right. And, you know, I was thinking about it and realized that they hadn't had a scene of the two of them since, one of the very first chapters of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, well, you kind of get the feeling that George was excited to write the two of them.
Yes. He was really excited.
Because he just goes on and on.
Yeah, he really
Woo-hoo!
Does.
Woohoo! Banter time! Let me at it! Yeah!
Well, and even when he got involved in, I know we've talked about this several times, and I can never remember, like, what it was, but that, like, fake battle tourney thing where it was Jaime versus some other mythical person, and he has, you know, George actually wrote it up, and it's Tyrion kind of helping Jaime win, more or less. And there's that banter between them.
Yeah, he clearly had wanted to write it again. Yeah, with the Savudu cage match or whatever it was that no one who's listening is going to know what the fuck we're talking about. But
I don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking
it's
about?
It's this. It was this genre site, Suvudu. I think it's Suvudu. And they did this cage match between, like, all of these fantasy characters, genre characters, like, who would face off against each other, basically, that have them battle. And the people on the site were, like, writing, like, you know, think of it like, for those in the U.S., it's kind of like, you know, like the NCAA basketball tournament, you know, like this massive tournament where everybody faces off and there's huge brackets. And they picked Jaime for... I think John might have also been in. I can't remember. They picked Jaime from A Song of Ice and Fire to be the champion who represented the series. And, like, they had him square off against all these other people. And he went really far. I think he might have gone to the end.
It
I think he might
final,
have been beaten by Randall Thor or something like that at the end. And
I found
George himself. Yeah, so they wrote the battles kind of like little mini fan fictions, right, between these fictional characters from different universes, this website did. George got so into it that he started writing the battles himself. He would write his own version of it, his own fan fiction of his own series about Jaime facing off against these other people.
And that's why we don't have wins yet.
This is why we don't have wins. And I think this might have even actually been before Dance was published. I can't remember.
Well,
but
it's in 2010, so yeah, it was before Dance.
Dance.
You know, it ends, you know, basically Jaime, you know, in his version, Jaime wins. And, you know, it ends with, you know, ends with Jaime going, "One question, brother. When we parted in the dungeon, certain things were said. I have not forgotten," Tyrion said softly, "nor forgiven. A Lannister always pays his debts, brother," said the dwarf. "Why help me then? I would have never survived any of these contests but for you." Tyrion Lannister grinned a savage grin. "Why, Jaime," he said, swirling the wine in his cup, "we are one blood, you and I. No one gets to kill my brother but me." So...
Oh, God. Well, he couldn't completely change, like, the setting of the story, but, yeah, it is interesting. Actually, it's really interesting because I think Jaime thinks about how Brienne is one of the top swordsmen
in the
world,
you know,
in that, too.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrion kind of has all of these trial of seven people, essentially, from, you know, different fantasy series. And Jaime's like, you know, or Brienne, or, you know, like, where are all these people that can actually help me? And one of them he thinks of is Brienne.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. Maybe people can Google it from the massive amount of information that we've given them about something they don't care about.
Well,
but
it's
actually
on George, and it's on George's, his live journal. So we'll post a link to it, too. But, but it's funny. It's just funny that it literally takes off from this exact point in the series. It seems like, I mean, how could you? I mean, I think anyone that's written fan fiction too in this universe, like, having Jaime and Tyrion together is really fun. Like, they're really fun characters and really easy, you know, really easy to just have, like, to go off and have them have, you know, super long conversations because of the chemistry between them. And in this chapter, it's like the first half of the chapter is so delightful compared to the last half, which is just so fucking horrible. So it's like this, thank God. So anyway, Jaime gives him the lay of the land and tells him that Varys is waiting for him and that he's arranged for a galley to take him to the Free Cities. And, you know, they laugh over the absurdity of Tyrion disguising himself for using a different name. You know, how many knows this dwarves do you think there are? And then Jaime bends down to kiss him goodbye. And thought it was interesting that, you know, Jamie kisses his scar. Because I always, you know, I think we wonder, you know, will he be doing the same with Brienne someday? And he tells...
Oh, I've never linked those two or had that.
Oh, I always think that, like, because it just makes a note of it, and it's, you know.
I love this.
Go ahead, Rachel.
No, I agree. I never made that connection, and it feels a bit obvious. So, well, yeah.
And just, you know, Tyrion's lost his nose, and, you know, when he meets up with Brienne again, you know, she's essentially lost a chunk of her face. And so I think it's sort of important, perhaps, that, you know, Jaime doesn't seem particularly taken aback by by Tyrion here.
I think what comes through, and this is the thing that, you know, having read, you know, so many Tyrion chapters over the last three books, is, you know, no one else loves Tyrion. Only Jaime. Like, only Jaime would bend down and, like, kiss him on this scar and mean it, you know? Like, only Jaime completely accepts Tyrion and loves him for, you know, existing, basically. And, you know, this is when George really shines, because this is very clear in just, like, what, a couple of pages of interaction. Mm-hmm. You can see just this is real, true, like, brotherly love that you're seeing here.
Yeah. So... You know, Jaime kisses him and tells Tyrion that his rescue was a debt he owed. And Tyrion doesn't understand, and he has this, you know, this line, like, Jaime's scared. Like, he is kind of freaked out that Jaime's scared. And, you know, Tyrion kind of tries to make light of it a little bit. Like, oh, is this some ugly truth? Ha, ha, ha. And you know, yeah, it's a really ugly truth. Jaime tells Tyrion the truth about Tysha, and that she really was just a crofter's daughter, and that Tywin commanded him to lie to him about it to Tyrion. And, you know, Jaime claims to not know what Tywin would do to her after. And, you know, we can debate, I think, you know, whether, I mean, it's like not the first time that Jaime's given Tywin the benefit of the doubt, and unfortunately not the first time that, you know, Tywin's proved not worthy of it. So you can kind of debate whether or not Jaime should have, you know, kind of thought about what was going to happen to Tysha, you know, in this whole situation.
I mean, to me, this is a secret you take to the grave.
Yeah.
Yeah, why does he choose to unburden himself here?
Like, it's kind of selfish, I think.
Yeah.
That's what I felt like.
It's that kind of, like, selfish trying to be selfless. Like, he's trying to be, like, or at least the way I read it, is that he's trying to, like, broadly do the right thing. Like, he's kind of overcompensating for his past misdeeds by, like, being kind of hard-headed about what the right thing is, regardless of potential consequences. And also, like, for him, this is probably, at some point, like, he's going to be thinking to himself that this is the last time he's going to have this chance to tell Tyrion this.
Well, he's been thinking about this ever since River Run, too, you know?
Right.
Mm.
But, I mean, so I mean, you should have said it, yeah.
It's definitely in part for, like, his own catharsis, but I definitely do still understand it as, like, a... Like, I don't necessarily hold it against him exactly. Like, it's not a...
It's, I mean, yeah. It's like, on one hand, he's giving Tyrion the gift of, you know, saying, no, I'm not the only person that's ever loved you. Like, this girl loved you, but then also, like, torturing him with the what happened to him and what his part in it was.
Yeah, I think it's part of Jaime's processing of that, like, the fine line between honor and reason. Like, we know that he looks up to Ned in a way, and Ned is very much that honor before reason kind of guy, where, like, he'll do the honorable thing regardless of, like for its own sake. So, mm-hmm. And I've always seen this as, like, part of Jaime's, you know, a lot of his character is about being stuck between this rock and a hard place of honor versus the right thing. And he probably sees telling the truth here as the honorable thing to do, even if it isn't necessarily the right, like, it plays into that. And that's not to say that it isn't the right thing to do. It's a stupid thing to do. But he's also not one to think about consequences.
There isn't a right thing to do. Like,
the right thing to do is
for it to never happen, you know?
Right.
I mean, or if you were going to confess, the right thing would have been to do, you know, as soon as Tyrion was old enough that he could maybe go try to find Tysha or something, you know, like... A scenario where there's a positive for Tyrion, I guess, is the one in which this is. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, sometimes we do things and we don't think through everything. You know, I mean, you might go, I need to apologize for this. I need to apologize for this. And you're not really thinking about anything but how it is for you. You know, I mean, I can get that. I totally get Jamie's perspective and why he does
this for like months. You know,
clearly one of the first things he mentions in his first chapter in A Storm of Swords is, you know, there's one thing that's been, you know.
I mean, he mentions really it back in the cat's chapter, you know, like, it's...
Yeah, he mentions it there too. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's clearly the thing that he views as his greatest sin.
Yeah.
For better or for worse, this is what he views as his greatest sin.
So he's really unburdening himself, and it really probably doesn't have too much to do with Tyrion.
Yeah. Right.
I would love to have this from his POV.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Ditto.
So... You know, Tyrion is sick. You know, he's sick about this, and he's absolutely furious. And he hits Jaime, and, you know, Jaime's been kind of leaning down, so he sends him tumbling. And he tells Jaime that a Lannister always pays his debts, and Jaime's going to have it coming. He asks Jaime if he can fight left-handed, and Jaime, you know, is kind of like, yeah, but I suck. And Tyrion's like, good, so we'll be evenly matched if we meet again. Which is kind of, it's so funny that I can't read this chapter from a place of not knowing what was going to happen next. And I've seen things where people are like, oh, you know, Tyrion shouldn't be burning that bridge. And to me, I've always read it as like, oh, fuck, Jaime. Like, now you got, like, the Starks after you for some flippant comment, and now you've got, you know, Tyrion after you for this, like... You know, you've got a lot of people, a lot of enemies that have a lot of power potentially. So Jaime in turn asked Tyrion if he really killed Joffrey, and you know, here's the passage that launched 1,000 copy pace in the next two books. Tyrion tells him, "You poor, stupid, blind, crippled fool. Must I spell every little thing out for you? Very well. Cersei is a lying whore. She's been fucking Lancel and Osmond Kettleblack and probably Moonboy for all I know. And I am the monster they all say I am. Yes, I killed your vile son." He made himself grin. It must have been a hideous sight to see there in the torchlit gloom. Jaime turned without a word and walked away. Tyrion watched him go, striding on his long, strong legs, and part of him wanted to call out, to tell him that it wasn't true, to beg for his forgiveness. But then he thought of Tysha, and he held his silence. He listened to the receding footsteps until he could hear them no longer. Then he waddled off to look for Varys. Ugh, so, it's...
I mean, again, you totally get this. Yeah, right. But you totally get it. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
And especially for siblings who are used to fighting, you know to just go straight for the jugular. With somebody that you fight with a lot, like a sibling, and Tyrion does.
And, you know, they hurt each other so much here, but, you know, they love each other. So, you know, what do you guys think is going to happen when they meet again?
I mean, it's obvious to me, reading their later chapters, both of them, the way that they can't fully think of the other one as evil, that... they will, if they were to meet again, they would totally, you know, patch things up. I mean, even Tyrion, I think in one of his last chapters in Dance, is like, literally, he's like, yeah, I don't even know with Jaime anymore. Like, he can't keep hating him. He's just not capable of it.
Do you think, oh, go ahead, Rachel.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I don't, like, Jaime's not all that attached to Joffrey, and like, you know, I feel like it's pretty well established that his reaction to Joffrey dying was like, yeah, that makes sense. So I don't know that he would hold that against him exactly. He's a lot more like, as I recall, he gets a lot more fixated just on the Cersei betrayal rather than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's not particular. You know, Tyrion does all this terrible stuff to him, and he's like, yeah, that tracks. I get it.
And Tywin clearly had it coming, you know, like... Jamie knows.
Yeah, no, he's mad about Tywin.
He feels responsible for that. Right. I don't remember him particularly being like really angry with or like blaming Tyrion. Yeah, he does
a couple times, but then he also goes completely the other way around by the end of Feast too. Kind of the same as Tyrion does.
I don't remember that being like a major conflict is what I'm saying, is that not the way that like the deal with
Cersei I think he opens Feast by wishing he'd killed Tyrion, but yes. By the end of Feast he is not wishing that anymore.
Right.
We're all in agreement. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's also interesting, kind of as a sidebar, that they both have this weird, like, coping mechanism almost of, like, playing the villain. Like, they both, like, immediately jump into the role of the monster that they feel like they are being accused of being, right? Like... Like, I mean, Tyrion,
they've both been put in that role by society, you know?
Right, no, but I mean, like, their reaction to it, I feel like it's just, like, it makes sense that family members would both have a similar coping mechanism like this. I just think it's, like, a good note on George's part.
Why did Cersei get that? Like, she's the one that would have done well to, like, accept her villainy a little bit.
An interesting familial similarity between these two in particular, anyway, that like, because like Jamie kind of does the same thing that Tyrion does, where like after he kills Aerys, he doesn't say why he killed Aerys. He's just like, yep, I'm an Oathbreaker, that's me, you got me, and moves on. And like, that's how they cope with those accusations.
Well, you have to have self awareness to have this coping mechanism, true. And that's, well, that's why Cersei doesn't have
there
it.
You go.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of wondered if, you know, Jamie is part of Dany's betrayal for love. Like, Tyrion would betray her for love, and it'd be for Jaime.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, I like that.
Because it just seems...
I mean, I like to think of him lasting that long.
I know. We'll never know, but, right? You know, whatever.
We'll never
will
know.
Never. No.
So anyway. So now we're going to get ready for the horrible part of the chapter, now that we've had the fun part. It's amazing. Like, the fun part was way better than I remembered it being. Like, it was way more fun. And the non-fun part is infinitely worse than I remembered it being, especially, you know, having sat through all these chapters. So, anyway, here we go. So Tyrion finds Varys on the stairs, and he's still kind of pissed that Varys didn't help him during his trial. But he doesn't murder Varys. He asks him, you know, Varys tells him that Cersei was watching him. But, you know, Jaime can be super persuasive, you know, in quotes, I'm sure, and that's why he's here now. So it's interesting to note, though, that, you know, Varys actually testified against him as well, but Tyrion seems okay with that. He asks him about Sansa, and Varys tells him that she vanished with Dantos Hollard, and even his little birds haven't found a trace of her. And I was wondering, do you guys think this is true? Or is he just telling Tyrion this because, you know, Tyrion, he doesn't want Tyrion thinking to go after Sansa or anything.
I kind of think it might be true.
I think it's true. I don't think he thinks Tyrion would go after Sansa.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So they have a little small talk about the dungeons, and we find out that Tyrion was on the third level, which is the same as Ned when he was in the dungeons as well. Varys tells him there's a fourth level where, quote, one never sees the sun again, nor hears a human voice, nor breathes a breath free of agonizing pain. And, you know, in the spirit of the Princess Bride, I totally picture, like, that dude from The Princess Bride, like, working down there.
Oh, the torture?
Yeah, like, that's where he works.
The albino?
Yes. The albino totally works down there.
Yeah. I was reading this and I was like, oh, this is probably in this stupid Fire and Blood or whatever this book is.
Oh, yeah. Definitely in Fire and Blood.
Totally. I mean, that we're none of us are reading tonight, except probably some of us might be. I don't know.
Are you? Oh, you love Targaryens. You
I don't love Targaryens and I haven't bought it. I just want to, I would like someone to give me the gist of it, basically. That's what my goal is. So
I'm sure if you check in at RASOIAF, like, tomorrow you will find out everything you never needed to know about it.
Which is really all I need to know. So anyway, so they're, you know, so they've got that going for them. They're not on the fourth level, but they're actually walking down to the fourth level. And Varys tells Tyrion to give him his hand because they're going to walk in darkness because there are things they don't want to see.
Isn't it funny to think of Tyrion and Varys holding hands
yes,
and kind of like
dungeon. Yes.
Skipping through the dungeon.
It's a weird date night.
So Tyrion wonders if Varys is just fucking with him at this point. But then he thinks that, well, you know, Jaime wouldn't be afraid. And then he immediately is like, well, shit, I hate Jaime. Like, he really, like, he can't really keep up that. You know, he's got a lifetime of admiration for Jaime that he can't just quite get rid of immediately. And, you know, Tyrion has this great moment where he thinks about how he arrived in King's Landing as the, you know, acting hand of the king. And he rode through the gates at the head of his own men. And, you know, now he's leaving like a rat. They emerge below the Tower of the Hand, and Tyrion thinks of the secret staircase to his old bedchamber that Shay told him about. And, you know, he's like, well, shit, now it's my father's bedchamber. He asks Varys how far he needs to climb, and Varys tells him it's 230 rungs, and, you know, warns him not to do it, but also gives him explicit instructions on how to do it. So it's like this total, bitch, don't do it. It's like, yeah. I'm doing it.
He's being Hagrid. I shouldn't have told you that. But to get there, this is what you do step by step.
Right. Like, this is really, yeah.
Well, you kind of have to wonder if the wheels are spinning in Varys' mind. He's like, is there a downside in this for me? I mean, Varys is already being forced away from King's Landing. I mean, Jaime has made sure of that at this point. So
that's interesting maybe when you think like, about it. Yeah. Like, Jaime really forces his hand here.
Yeah.
Well, that's because Jaime is an agent of chaos in this story.
Yeah, and if, you know, if you think, like, if Varys was still in King's Landing during Feast, you know, what does that mean for the story? I mean, I feel like it's like he wouldn't even really have anything to do because how does he accelerate, you know, I mean, does he work for Cersei so she doesn't, like, destroy
he
everything
quite so
quickly?
He would have to work for her enough so that she wouldn't notice, you know, that he was working against her.
But it's like
so.
He could just take, like, a break because she's fucking it all up on her own. Like, he doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think part of the problem George would have faced if he'd left Varys in King's Landing is, you know, would it be believable for Cersei to be as stupid and to know as little as she knows? And so he has to get him out. It's kind of like... You know,
well, it's kind of like how Jaime
the
has
way
to
that
leave.
I know that the way that I know that like Barristan has to die before Dany gets to Westeros, it's because he would help her too much. You know, I mean, like just things like that. He just has to eliminate certain people.
Or Victarion,
you know?
Would be just fine. He's not going to help her at all. Like,
totally.
You get to live for a while longer, you moron. anyway, so Tyrion starts to climb. And, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, this is the moment for him. You know, we've seen his physical struggles throughout the books. And, you know, it feels like Sansa's climbed down to escape King's Landing. Like, this is his challenge. And, you know, the tunnel gets smaller and smaller. And he thinks, you know, at last a place made for dwarves. And, you know, this feels like the moment that, you know, his entire POV, frankly, has been building to. And as he's climbing up, he hears two of his father's guardsmen talking about how they want to fuck Shay and speculating on how Tyrion is going to go to his death the next day. And, you know, he realizes, you know, just how much Varys' little birds have been able to learn over the years because he can hear, like, this entire conversation perfectly.
Well, he's learning that Varys is his own little birds a lot of the time.
Yeah. So Tyrion gets to the bedchamber and he immediately hears a woman's voice and it's Shay. And when he reveals himself, he asks if she was expecting someone taller. And she immediately starts crying and tells him that Cersei forced her testimony and that she's frightened of Tywin, too. And she tells him that Tywin will be back soon and tells Tyrion to go or take her with him. And I just, like, this is really different in the show, and I think I get... You know, we talk about the whitewashing of Tyrion quite a bit. And I get this moment. Like, if I was writing the show, I would have written it the exact same way. Because the way that it's written in the books, Tyrion is dead to me. You know, you have to have Shay reaching for a knife first. Like, otherwise, you know, you've totally destroyed your main character, essentially. So in this version, however, You know, this is what happens. She starts to cry, tells him that Cersei forced her testimony, just like he's literally accepted as an excuse for Varys minutes before, and that she's scared of Tywin, and asks her to take her with him. You know, is there any reason for us to believe she doesn't mean it? You know, she doesn't call for Tywin. She doesn't do anything else. She literally is like, I'm fucking terrified. Take me with you.
I mean, we could have a pretty decent argument that he would not want to believe her or would have no good reason to believe her. But I mean, like, your argument that I think you're making is he kills her purely for vengeance. I mean, yes. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so.
I think she's sincere, though. I definitely think she's sincere, but she just knows how to play her part.
I think Shay is someone that kind of just hops on whatever she thinks the best ship is, and Tyrion seemed like his ship was sinking, so she, like, that's how I read it.
Do you think that Shay had a choice to sleep with Tywin?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Not as
Do you think
such
that Tywin
exactly...
was like, I'm gonna fuck you because you were fucking my son, and, like, that gives me power over him?
No, I mean, it's funny that you asked that. I have always just assumed that Shay figured her best way out was to, you know, seduce Tywin. Because, I mean, it's clear that Cersei's the one who went to Shay. You know, Cersei's the one who sought Shay out, not Tywin. So, I mean, like, I guess my take on it has always been, this is how Shay understands to secure her safety, you know, is sleep with people and make them not want to kill you. And so... my assumption has always been that whatever happened after the trial, she was like, oh, if I seduce Tywin, then he won't want to kill me. She understands that Tywin is a threat.
Yeah, that was my reading.
How would she have gotten into a situation where she could have seduced Tywin?
No, that's what I wondered.
Why would he even be seduced by her?
Well, I guess I'm not imagining a seduction. More of like not that like he wouldn't have, you know, power played her into sex, but more like she just was kind of game for it before he could even try. Like she was kind of ahead of him on that one. Cause like, that's just the life that she's been living so far. Like that kind of situation. That's what I always pictured in my brain.
I've always thought, you know, he's the hand of the king, and you know, she doesn't have access to him. He has all
of the
access.
Well, she would have, though, after the trial. I mean, more than likely, either right before or right after her testimony, I'm sure she would have been around Tywin. It's hard to imagine that Tywin and Kevin wouldn't have had questions for her once Cersei, you know, brought her to light. It kind of seemed like Cersei'd had her hidden until she hauled her out the day of the trial, because as we talked about before, I don't think Tywin would have allowed her testimony in public if he'd known how humiliating it was going to be. So my feeling has always kind of been sometime after the trial, more than likely Tywin was like, I need to get to the bottom of this. And basically was like, what happened? And
to me, it's always been a power play by Tywin just to get one over his son again.
But I mean,
it could be,
I guess I've always kind of just thought it was both, you know,
like I always just kind of thought it was convenience. I mean, you know, Tywin's so against, you know, people engaging prostitutes, he probably has to be careful in how he engages with his own. And it's like the opportunity presented itself and he's just like, oh, here's some money, will you sleep with me? I mean, like, I don't know, just everything about the fact that she's wearing the Hand of the King necklace in Tywin's bed says it doesn't seem like a coerced situation. Like, I kind of doubt Tywin would allow something that playful to go on if he was like literally had her at knife point, but I don't know.
Well, I don't think I think it's just he doesn't have to have her at knife point. I mean, the knife point is implied by, you know, who he is.
Right. I think, I also say this. I think both situations, like, either separate or as some kind of horrible Frankensteinian amalgamation of the two happening to coincide, I think any variation thereupon is plausible, and it's kind of a weak point for me in the story that we don't know more about how this happened, because it does feel like just a random thing to make Tyrion feel even worse about everything. Like, it feels kind of out of nowhere that it would be Shay in particular. I'm not saying that there isn't a justification, I just, like, clearly there isn't a clear one that we can all of us agree upon.
Oh, yeah, no, clearly we don't all even agree on how it could have happened. I mean, like, you know, it could have been any one of a million things, and it's like you kind of never will know.
Right.
But, you know, I agree with you. It's shoehorned in. It's funny that you say shoehorned in, because I've always a little bit felt that the Jamie and Tysha thing was a little shoehorned in, the way that...
Because, like, what would Jamie have even been doing there? Like, he was in the Kingsguard.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like...
The fact that they were together and everything. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was part of the original story, so I kind of... I get it. But, yeah, it is... I think it's one of those things, you know, I think when you go into a story, right, and we talk about George being a gardener and not an architect or whatever, but even if you're a gardener, you have certain story points in mind that you're going to hit, you know? And I think George probably envisioned this thing of Tyrion shooting Tywin on the crapper, like right around the beginning of the story.
Oh,
I think
hell yeah.
Something that was always part of Tyrion's
very
story.
Early.
And I think George was going to get there, you know, by hook or by crook. And this is kind of the, you know, the difference between being an architect and a gardener as a writer is, you know, like an architect decides ahead of time, this is the plot, this is everything that happens. Whereas a gardener kind of lets things happen organically. But every once in a while, you kind of see that George maybe isn't 100% organic with something. And I kind of, it's kind of like this. It's a little bit, you know, like the assassin sent to kill Bran. There are a few things that aren't organic, just kind of things that he had.
That wildling that happened to overhear Bran or Theon or whatever in the wild.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like these things are, you know, they stand out more in George's work because so much of the plot is organic feeling. So every once in a while when something's a little forced, and I've always thought this is just one of those things, he just wanted to do this, he was going to make it happen no matter what, and then he did.
Do you guys think that, I mean, this whole part of the story would not have happened had Jaime not told him about Tysha, right?
I don't think so, yeah.
He would have just left.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way that it's written, and we didn't really talk about this too much, but, you know, I've always admired the way that this chapter is written, because... if you were going to write someone having a psychotic break, this is probably how you'd do it. You know, like people don't even use the term psychotic break in like, you know, clinical settings anymore. But like this, that is the thought process here. Clearly, it's just, you know, something in Tyrion just
quite
literally breaks loose
because
when Jaime tells him this.
Well, and I mean, even when he murders Shay, you know, it's just she tells him that she, you know, he asked her if you know, she liked it when he fucked her. And she tells him yes and calls him my giant of Lannister. And we get like the, you know, he has his hands on her. And then like literally the next line is like, and after, like,
afterward,
it's not even
in the
narrative.
Yeah, he kind of like, it's like he blacks out
essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't diminish the fact for me that he straight up fucking murders her.
No reason, but his only motive is, I mean, like, we could have an argument that he needed to kill her if he wanted to kill Tywin, but I mean, you know, so he needed to murder someone to murder someone. But I mean, the truth is he's murdering her for vengeance. He wants to kill her.
Why would Shay have like stopped him from murdering Tywin?
She might have yelled out. I don't even know. I mean, like, I can see someone mounting the defense. I've seen the defense mounted, and it's like one of those things where, you know, okay, I can't definitively say, but I mean, like, it's pretty clear to me that he wanted to kill her. And so he killed her. He was pissed to find her there.
Well, and
what a defense that is. I had to kill her so that I could have an easier time killing someone else.
Exactly.
That makes me
exactly.
What kind
of defense? You know, he's just learned the manipulations that Tywin did with Tysha, and he has to remember how he participated and what he did to her, and basically now he's blaming Shay for what Cersei and Tywin did to him. Like, to me, I mean, yeah, I get the whole, you know, I can get the psychotic break, but I also feel like it wasn't like he was a healthy functioning human adult before he learned all of this either. Like,
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here. Like, we need to not pretend that he doesn't have reason to be angry with Shay. I mean, she helped literally send him to the gallows here. I mean, like, he does have reason to be angry, but that doesn't mean,
you know,
murder is kind of a bit extra.
No, I'm not in any way justifying. I'm just saying it's not as though there's nothing behind this. There is something behind this. He does have a real, you know, gripe with her. She did lie to make him seem worse. But yeah, no, there's no question. This is just straight up vengeance. I mean, I don't think he would argue that it's vengeance. I think that's what it is.
So are we ready to move on?
Okay, well, here's a question.
Yeah. No. Okay. I love it.
You mentioned the show. Why did they whitewash this? I mean, like, I've never understood it.
To me,
there are so many gray color or gray characters that they did include in the show.
Yeah.
Is it too dark?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's practicalities. It's just kind of cynical audience. You know, most people aren't there to watch, you know, this kind of suit, like that level of dark. Most people, when they want dark, they just want, you know, blood and violence and sex. Like, that's, most people are just sitting down to have a thrilling evening before they go to bed Sunday night.
Right.
It's not, they don't want, like, to have, Tyrion in the show had been this, like, kind of like the favorite character, like one of the big main audience surrogates for the show. And having that ripped out from under you for a casual audience is going to be, that would have been too much.
And if they're not going to tell.
That's like an indie movie move.
Well, and if they're not going to have Tysha, how can you, you know, if you're not giving him that moment of Tysha,
yeah,
it's like, it's already weird enough that he goes to kill Tywin. You know,
well, what's funny to me, though, is the show, if the show had played Shay, you know, as she is straight from the books, would it have been that big a deal? Or is it because they humanized Shay so much and made her, like, love Tyrion back and such a good character and not the really savvy person she is in the books? You know, they made her kind of morally good.
Both, I'm sure. Like, if she had been as she is in the books, I don't know, maybe some more really hardcore, like the more scarier parts of the internet would have defended him more fervently, but I think given how much more sympathetic she is in the show, having him murder her straight out definitely would have been that much worse.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know. I've always just wondered. I've just been like, if you were afraid of it being too dark, why make her so much more sympathetic? I don't know. It was a weird for me. I just could never figure out what their motivation was there.
Well, I think that's why they have a reach for a knife too. To like,
yeah, no, I know it. I know it is. Yeah, they want to whitewash it, but it's weird. It was a weird. I mean, obviously, it was a weird choice.
So
I agree.
So in my notes, I wrote, you know, I hate Tyrion more than any other Lannister, except that after murdering Shay, we see a worse Lannister. Tyrion, he grabs a crossbow and he finds Tywin in the bathroom. And Tywin claims that, you know, he was really going to send Tyrion to the wall. But Tyrion doesn't give a shit. He asks Tywin what he did with Tysha. And he realizes that Tywin doesn't even remember her name. And then he calls her Tyrion's first whore. And Tyrion promises that if he uses that word again, he'll kill him. And Tywin tells Tyrion that he doesn't know what happened to Tysha, that it wouldn't have made sense to kill her since, and this is the quote that makes me want to kill him myself. He says, it doesn't make sense to kill her since she, quote, learned her place and had been well paid for her day's work. And honestly, that's when I want, like, the Red Keep to implode and kill both of them at that moment. He says the steward must have sent her on her way, and Tyrion asks where, and Tywin tells him, wherever whores go. And, you know, whatever else we say about Tyrion in this chapter, he keeps his promises, and, you know, I think George is really proud of this last little bit of the POV, so I'm gonna read it. Tyrion's finger clenched. The crossbow wanged just as Lord Tywin started to rise. The bolt slammed into him above the groin, and he sat back down with a grunt. The quarrel had sunk deep, right to the fletching. Blood seeped out around the shaft, dripping down into his pubic hair and over his bare thighs. "You shot me," he said incredulously, his eyes glassy with shock. "You are always quick to grasp a situation, my lord," Tyrion said. "That must be why your hand of the king." You are no son of mine." "Now that's where you're wrong, father. Why, I believe I'm you, writ small. Do me a kindness now and die quickly. I have a ship to catch." For once his father did what Tyrion asked him. The proof was the sudden stench as his bowels loosened in the moment of death. Well, he was in the right place for it, Tyrion thought. but the stink that filled the privy gave ample evidence that the oft-repeated jape about his father was just another lie. Lord Tywin Lannister did not, in the end, shit gold. Like, I just pictured George, like, lighting a cigar when he finished.
Leaning back, like, lighting a cigar, exactly. Feet up.
The whole conflict has been building up to this one-liner.
I mean, pretty much, right? Like, so that, you know, when we think about the end of Storm of Swords and, you know, all of the characters kind of being ready for the next phase, you know, this certainly launches Tyrion into the next phase of his journey, where we will not be following him.
We will not go.
Places we will not go.
It's so funny that we already knew we were never going to do Tyrion's dance chapters before we started this reread. And
well,
now
I
it's
just
like,
can't even, I mean,
unbelievable to even imagine it.
Yeah. Cause it's, the self-pity.
I never want to read them again.
Like, just the... Yeah, it's... I mean, I barely want to read his Wins chapters, to be honest. You know, a couple questions from here. Do we believe Tywin that he was going to, like, give Tyrion some mercy at the last second and send him to the wall? Or is that just bullshit?
Yeah, yeah, no, I
don't.
It. You don't? I believe it.
No. I don't know if they have him killed publicly, but I don't know.
An accident may have befallen him on the way north.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, knowing Cersei, for sure.
Yeah, although you'd think, like, if Tywin was going to do it at the last second, he would have at least told Jaime, because he figured Jaime would be upset about it, you know? And actually, though, I guess
but he and
Jaime
aren't talking.
Yeah, no, but maybe it was like a branch he would extend to Jaime, you know? Like,
I don't know. Well, Jaime's done such a good job of pretending he doesn't care about Tyrion because he's so much smarter in the books than he is in the show. that I don't know that Tywin would have been that worried about letting Jaime know. No, I think it's real with Tywin. I mean, Tywin, if you can say anything about Tywin, he's a fucking straight shooter. So, I mean, like, I think it's real. I think it's true. I think that Tywin
love
probably...
that you just said that. Tywin's what? A straight shooter.
Oh, that was well timed.
It was great.
God. Why do we have such a hard, dark sense of humor?
To me, this has always been like, okay, his son, who hates him and who he hates, is pointing a crossbow at him and he has no protection. He's going to say whatever he needs to make sure he doesn't get shot by this crossbow.
Do you think he actually... I mean, I kind of feel like he would never think that Tyrion would actually do it.
Yeah, he didn't think...
He definitely didn't think
Tyrion would
do it.
Yeah, I don't think he thought he'd do it either. I mean, it's funny, he does pay attention. He does tell him to put the crossbow down, but it's, you know, like a dad telling their kid to, like, put your juice down before you spill it.
Right.
Like, he just thinks it's going to be, like, a terrible accident, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, don't play with that. Put it down.
It's all fun and games till someone gets quarreled in the groin.
God. I mean, but who knows? We'll never know. God, the thing I wish I knew is if Tywin really had been poisoned by Oberyn. That's really the greatest mystery for me.
I'm standing by it.
I mean, I just was thinking, and we have some questions if we're ready to move on to them. I had another one first, but I'm going to skip over to a different question first because it kind of pertains to this conversation. Someone named Thomas Blyce wrote in and said, hey gang, has it occurred to anyone else in the panel during the Tyrion Sansa reread just how many of the more tinfoil hat theories that we've now come to accept, you know, Tyrion Lannister being alive, Tywin being poisoned, etc. And also, I honestly, like, I've never read anything about Lancel being poisoned by Cersei, but reading Tyrion's chapters and Sansa's chapters more closely, like, that's the one that sticks out at me. Like, that is clearly, like, she was clearly poisoning him. Like, I just picture I would love someone to write a little side story of, like, some apothecary in King's Landing who's, like, making all this money because everyone's buying all the poisons.
Well, you know what I think it is? It's like every time I've read this series a few times, but, you know, of course you just kind of focus on what you're most interested in. And as much as I always used to like Tyrion as a character. Like, I don't know that I, you know, picked through his chapters with a fine tooth comb like I have with, like, say, Jaime and Brienne. And it is amazing when you do, you know, kind of pick through with a fine tip or fine tooth comb what you find. And I mean, I, number one, definitely something's going on with Tyrick Lannister. We're definitely going to hear more about it. It's not just going to be one of those one off that you never hear about again.
Are we, though?
I think so. I do. And I think,
I mean, will we ever get it?
Oh, well, no, we'll never get it. George intended for there to be something. Maybe that's,
yeah,
that's how I need to start phrasing all this stuff from now on. George intended to do that. And like, I fucking think Oberyn might have been poisoning Tywin. There's so much reference to it. And
like how much he stinks. Yeah. I mean,
just in the last three chapters alone, Tyrion chapters alone, there's so many times that it's brought up. So yeah, I definitely think he did.
And like, really, and
the Lancel thing, I think she was poisoning him.
Oh yeah, she's totally poisoning Lancel. Like, that's when I'm most convinced.
The way that Kevin mentions how she's visiting, and like, it's
and he just can't get better, and he's like 18 years old. Yeah, and he's not getting any better. Like, something's up with this. Oh God. Yeah. But yeah, like, everyone is literally poisoning everyone, like, pretty much. And some dude's getting, like, super wealthy from it all. So we had another question from Ulmo80, who says, hello, ladies and the occasional gentleman. As always, your insight and analysis are indeed complete. Wow. I found the comparison between Persephone, Hades, and Sansa the Veil quite interesting. I hadn't seen it. I have a couple of questions about Sansa. Do you think she'll marry Harry the heir, even if they don't have confirmation on if Tyrion is still alive? Would Littlefinger take the risk? Do you guys, I kind of feel like she's not going to ever marry Harry.
No, I don't think she's going to marry Harry the heir.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so thinking about how Sansa will leave the Vale, I was wondering what George could do. I've been speculating about some scenarios. First, Sander goes on his own to the Vale, using the tourney as an excuse, blends in, and rescues her. Brienne finally goes to the Vale, and using the tourney as an excuse, blends in, and rescues her. Brienne and Jaime, after dealing with Stoneheart, go to the Quiet Isle, and then we see Rescuing the Little Bird, starring The Wench, The Hound, The Kingslayer, with the Blackfish as a special guest. I would like to know which one you think would be the most plausible if you think there would be another possibility.
Well, I don't care about plausible, but I like that last one.
I know, right? Like, who doesn't want that? Like, if that happens, how mad would you be that didn't happen in the show? Like, come on. That's what we all want.
Well, I've talked about this before on podcast, but my pet wins theory is that, in fact, Brienne is not taking Jaime to Stoneheart. That, in fact, she has come up with a plan that they go get Sansa and basically barter for Pod and Hyle back.
But Pod's been hanging there for 13 years. I keep adding a year every time I
really
mention
think,
it.
I really think that Jaime and Brienne will probably show up in the Vale in Winds, that which we'll never get, as Devin has so kindly pointed out.
I used to be such an optimist before I started.
Oh no, did they kill your hope? He killed Devin's hope.
No.
The greatest crime.
We have a couple more questions if you guys want to, let's go for it. Okay.
Go for it.
How do you think the five, this is anonymous on Tumblr, how do you think the 5-year time skip George planned would have affected Jaime and Brienne?
I'm down for that Brienne is pretty Maris theory. Like, I don't know if she would have been in Essos exactly, but like, you know, roughly like that hardened outline of character. Yeah. Like, she might have ended up as Pretty Maris in Westeros instead, and not with the Golden Company, but that basic outline.
Do you think she would have ended up with the Brotherhood?
Yeah, sure, why not?
It's funny, it's so easy with some characters to see where they were supposed to be after the 5-year skip, but with Jaime and Brienne, it's hard to know, were they supposed to reunite before or after?
Yeah, like, I mean, if it's after, then clearly, like, unless, like, someone's being pretty vigilant about the birth control, like, there's a little domestic situation happening, I think.
I mean, yeah, I kind of tend to think that they were probably supposed to reunite after, but I don't know.
I think so, too. So, I mean, I think, like, they're the characters that, you know, benefit. I mean, George wrote a whole book about him instead of, you know, having a time skip. So it's like, they're the characters that benefited from not having the time jump. at least, you know, for those of us who like to read about them. We've got a couple more questions. We have another anonymous that asks, who do you think would win it in a fair fight between two-handed Jaime and Brienne? Not counting the one in A Storm of Swords because he was locked up for a while and not in the best shape. I mean, I assume it's Jaime, but...
Jaime.
Brienne thinks Jaime would win.
Well, of course she does. she's thinking of that one through the eyes of love.
I don't know. I think they're through the eyes of, I barely pulled that off.
Yeah. Right. I definitely think Jaime.
So then we have a final question that came in from Twitter from Terrible Existence, and they say, I'll ask a question for the episode here. George's favorite character in the series is Tyrion. While in general the podcast has been down on him, to be mild, for the duration of the reread, what is the divide in the perception and interpretation of Tyrion between the cast and him? And where do you believe it comes from, you know, if we accept that there is a divide, really, in how we see Tyrion and maybe how George sees him?
Well, I feel like obviously we got a couple guys on here, but I mean, like, there probably is an element of the fact that we're women, honestly. You know, like, I think, God, there's a lot of misogyny in Tyrion. I think George intended a lot of it to be there, but I don't know that he is aware that all of it is misogyny, and I'll just maybe leave it there.
Yeah, I think this last chapter for me with Shay's murder, like, I feel like, you know, he doesn't even have the character of Tyrion really think about what he did that much, and it seems like he writes it as if it's not, like, a really huge deal, and part of it makes me feel like, you know how in, like, the CBS procedurals or in, you know, murder mysteries, like, a lot of the times the victim is a, you know, it's a nameless prostitute, and it's sort of like we're not even supposed to even know their name or even, like, act like they're a person. And part of Tyrion's chapters, you know, that's the irony of George, is that he writes Shay as a fairly complex person in some ways, and then, you know, kind of dismisses her murder because she's just a whore. And
I don't think that's entirely
fair. But, you know, the thing that Tyrion continually dwells upon is, you know, his father and Tysha. Like, it's sort of like he doesn't even think about what he did with Shay because she was just, you know, she's just a whore.
I mean, I want to say this. I feel like it needs to be said. I've never had the impression that George has written Tyrion as the hero of this piece.
No.
You know?
I mean, John's
so
the hero.
I don't think, unlike, say, when we're talking about the writers of Game of Thrones, I don't think George thinks of Tyrion as, you know, the good guy.
I
think George can accept him having darker sides very easily, whereas a lot of people don't maybe recognize that with Tyrion.
That's like that the Pixar's 22 Rules of Storytelling, one, like number two, I think, is what your audience wants to see is very different than what is interesting to you to do as a writer. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel like Tyrion's probably really great to write, even as he does get on our nerves.
It's so
readers.
Funny, Rachel. I have that poster, like, literally hanging up in my cubicle.
It's great. It's so great. I love it to pieces.
The other thing I feel like with George and with Tyrion and us maybe is, you know, so much I think of Tyrion's point of view is, like, there's a lot of him feeling sorry for himself about, like, his status in society, I feel like. And I kind of feel like as women, and this is going to be, like, a very broad generalization, but on some level, as women, like, we would never feel, it's the entire, and again, Devin and Cody, like, I'm sorry, I don't have to say, like, a flat out, I'm sorry to say this, but, like, there's a level of entitlement, I think, that sometimes men feel that women would never, like, intuitively feel like that, and so a lot of, like, Tyrion's issues with his status in life are things that a woman would never expect to just get. And so it's hard for me to have a ton of sympathy for him for some things.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize till this reread. Like I said, reading it closely, he thinks everyone owes him something. Mm-hmm. Just the sense of entitlement about so much that just goes on in his head, especially with Sansa. Some of the worst of it to me, that he expects her to be grateful and he wants her to love him for whatever reason. And he's mad that she doesn't. And that's just insane.
And it's hard because even when you're saying that, it's like, yeah, I mean, he's not the absolute worst. I mean, like, this chapter and what he does to Shay to me is unforgivable, but he's not the worst character in the story.
Well, no.
You know?
No, yeah, definitely not.
Like,
you'd have to try really hard to be the worst
character in the story. The bar is really low on that one.
And I just think, you know, I was kind of comparing him to Jamie in my head. And, you know, obviously I think, you know, my feathers get a little bit ruffled over the continual, well, Jamie threw a kid out the window. And, you know, you constantly hear that about everything, and you never hear, well, you know, Tyrion straight up murdered this girl because, she was a whore.
For jilted lover reasons.
That's a good point, though. Like, right there, if you were to take that at face value, what is the distinction between those two events occurring?
Well, I think that Jaime did it for love, because if he didn't do it, he and his sister and their kids were going to die. And Tyrion did it because he was super pissed.
But I think, because of love, though. I honestly think he's pissed because he either tricked himself into knowing and thinking that she loved him, or he just found out that, you know, the person who actually did love him, Tysha, was just screwed over entirely. He was screwed of that entire future.
Yeah, I feel like Shay was kind of like, you know when like your cat is chattering at birds outside and you touch it and it like whips around and scratches you because it can't get at the birds. I feel like Shay is you know, in that scenario where like she was just kind of, you know, the unfortunate recipient of a lot of it, like he was just in a rage. Anger. Yeah, like he probably would not have gone and sought out Shay. She just unfortunately brushed against him while he was chattering at birds, you know.
Well, you guys are making me feel a little bit better about Tyrion, because I really came in here pretty hot to, like, you know.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, I get it. I mean, like, I get why you're hot. I mean, it makes me angry too. Oh, I'm angry as well.
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, I mean, like, I do see the reasons. It's you know, it's very well written. You understand why he's come to this place. I'm not saying it's a good place to be or the right place to be. You know, but back to your point about, you know, like, what's the difference between Jaime and Tyrion? I mean, one of them did something horrible to protect, and with no malicious intent toward the person that they hurt, only an intention to protect other people. Whereas with Tyrion, there's nothing but malice in this. You know, it's just, it's malicious. It's malicious what he does. It's cruel.
And it's intentional.
It's deliberately cruel.
Yeah.
And that to me is the difference between them. And I realize there are people who can't see that difference. I guess, you know, motivation only matters, you know, in storybooks.
Like, it's totally based upon who they did it to. And it gets back to the Bran is a main character and Shay's just
and
a whore.
Shay's just a whore, yeah.
So it's like that's where that's like the part of it that enrages me a little bit, because I feel like she doesn't count because she's, you know, she's just a whore and like her.
I don't know if that's true, because she's so fleshed out in the book. I mean, not totally fleshed out, but she's a big character in his story.
I think as readers, though, I mean, as readers, we exist in our world, too. And like I said, there's so much fiction and there's so many movies where the victim is, you know, some nameless hooker. And like, we just sort of accept that. And like, then we go on to the real victims, like that first, you know, like the first hooker the serial killer kills is just a, you know, setup for the rest of the story.
Right.
And we're used to that. And so it doesn't seem as important. And, you know,
I get what Cody's saying, though, because George does give Shay a somewhat fair shake. He does, you know, it's very clear from day one what Shay's in this for.
Right. It's not necessarily.
It's only Tyrion who deludes himself. And we're not getting that because we're reading between the lines. That's actually what George has put in the book. I mean, like, I think in some ways, this is what I'm talking about. Sometimes some of the misogyny he writes on purpose, you know, but there are some casual things like the fact that Tyrion feels entitled to, for instance, a beautiful wife. Well, Tyrion's not a beautiful guy. You know, I mean, like. There are some things that George just kind of takes for granted or okay for Tyrion to think, like that he should have like a really great looking wife and that she should just love him back just because he's a great person. And it's like, well, why don't you love a woman just because she's a great person?
I mean, could you imagine Brienne thinking these thoughts?
No, of course not. These are some of the things that, you know, it's just kind of taken for granted for men to think. I do think George figured out that he'd done that though, because of what he's doing with Tyrion and Penny in Dance. But I think this is something that George himself either had pointed out to him or kind of came to a realization about later on.
Right.
But a lot of the misogyny that we've seen from Tyrion that I think bothers me most is, like you were talking about, Guile, just the amount of entitlement that he feels despite, you know, obviously living with a disability and you know, having some real obstacles to deal with in life, you know, living in a, you know, as a class of person who does not get the full rights that someone in Westeros could expect to have otherwise. I mean, like, I definitely, you know, feel sympathy for that and everything, but at the same time, he does have a lot of entitlement that to me is just straight up misogyny. And I think that's a lot of why you hear us just unable to
see anything else.
It's funny though.
Tyrion is stuck in his own friend zone, right?
Yeah,
that's exactly how he feels.
And it's funny because I was thinking of, you know, the other characters who we've gone through their POVs and our reactions to them. And, you know, Jaime and Brienne are kind of on their own plane. And, you know, Cersei, I think we just sort of generally found ridiculous. Like, like without, and then, you know, Kat was, you know, Kat's prickly, but, you know, I don't think there was like the vitriol that, you know, at least I was feeling towards Tyrion, that anyone felt towards her. And then Asha, I think, was just... Her. What was that?
I said, I love Kat, so I definitely didn't feel anything toward her.
And, you know, Asha, I think, well, I mean, I just straight up was, like, in love with her. So, this is, like, the one POV, like, it, you know, the one POV where it's really, like, oh, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to be... I mean, I kind of feel like that about Cersei. Like, it's just sort of like, ugh, your head is, you know, your head's messing with me.
Oh, but I love hanging out in Cersei's head. It's such a mess in there.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's a place.
She's my favorite trash fire.
I mean, it's a good thing that Tyrion is so witty. Otherwise, I don't think you could stomach his chapters from day one. Yeah, I mean,
I think him being in the plot heavy is really much more bearable than him, you know, as the narrator of a travel log. Like, it's just like, oh, God, like, no, I want, you know, if you're talking to people and, yeah, it's just, it's like his dance plot is just not the right one for me personally to read again. I mean, I don't know.
My take on it is just this. It's just like, look, the joke's on everybody else who thinks that Tyrion is their hero here, you know? That's not what's happening here. I don't know what else to say about it. And that has never been more clear than in this read.
I actively hope that he never gets to ride the dragon. Everybody's always like, oh, I hope he gets to ride a dragon. I'm like, no. Why? He doesn't get to do fun things. No.
It's interesting, you know, given, well, I'm not going to get into it because I think we have people that are not spoiled, so I won't say anything. Anything else on Tyrion?
Nope.
Last words. So I want to give a little bit of a programming note. We are going to be moving into for the next few weeks, and we have a couple of episodes we've already recorded as well for over the holidays, but we're going to be moving into a series of our favorite chapters, and we have some listener choice chapters too, and we'll periodically put those out, Twitter polls out there, so you want to be sure to... follow our Twitter at Door Podcast if you want to help us choose what chapters to cover. But I think our next one is, I don't think we have a schedule, an official schedule, but I think our next chapter is Davos. It's the one that, it's really the one, Chicky, that you that you read.
The one I actually, yeah.
The one you actually read. So I think it's
the one I read when I wasn't supposed to read it.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's either the one where Wyla Manderly is awesome, or it's the actual The North Remembers chapter. I'm not sure which one, but it's one of those Davos chapters.
I'm pretty sure it's the and, one where he
among
yells
others,
at the Fray.
We'll have our first, like, among the other ones we'll have our first Theon chapter that we've done, and the first Dany chapter that we've done. So,
oh God,
first and probably last. So, and it looks like from our current Twitter poll, well, did we get a what? Yeah. What was that?
I said, get me in on that Dany chapter.
Yeah, I mean, clearly.
Please take my place.
And then, you know, it looks like we're going to have a Melisandre chapter as well. So there'll be some different
Yay,
POVs.
Did she win?
She's winning. And I think since we'll take the top two, we're pretty much sure to do Mel's chapter. So we'll have some different POVs than we've done yet, which will be kind of interesting. So we've got that coming up, and then we'll have to have some programming notes about what will be coming up before Game of Thrones Season 8, which looks like it's going to start. Looks like the rumors are either August 21st or August 20th, or August, oh my God.
April
21st or April 28th.
I was like, don't make this worse.
Yeah,
the only like we're going to get. I can't wait till August.
Yeah, look
it's
like
be the 28th.
Yeah. Looks like those are the dates that it's looking like. So we'll have some programming notes coming up soon about what we have planned for kind of the late winter, early spring time period. So look for that, everyone.
Awesome.
So anyway, there's some more questions I didn't get to, but we'll get to them in the coming weeks. And I know there's a couple that we're saving for a future drunk cast to be determined. And but keep sending them in. If you guys like are really offended by everything I said about Tyrion, which very likely could happen, let me know. You can reach us at Close the Door and Come Here on Tumblr and Podbean, or closethedoorand@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at Door Podcast, or you can become a Patreon and receive benefits like episodes a little bit early. And that's at, I think it's just Close the Door and Come Here on Patreon. And you can listen to us on Podbean, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts, we will be there. I'd like to thank our panel. This was a good one, you guys. It's a fun chapter and then a horrible chapter. And it's kind of fun because I came in with a certain attitude, and you guys definitely all talked me down a bit, which is always kind of fun to get your mind your mind shifted a little bit. So I appreciate that. But I'm going to close the door. Get out.
Get out, Tyrion. Jesus.
Yeah, get out, Tyrion.